Price, and this is Price Talks, the special NPA edition. I was an NPA counselor back in the 80s, and now Rob McDowell is here, being my co-host. And we got a current NPA counselor, the NPA counselor, I'm going to say, MDG. That's what we call you, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
What's it stand for?
Melissa DeGenova.
We don't even have to spell it. We just have three letters. It's terrific.
There you go.
Thank you for coming. This is great.
Thank you for having me.
Because the life of a counselor is, well, I'm not going to say hell, but boy, does it suck up the time. How do you manage time?
Well, there's not enough hours in the day, yeah. That's for sure. And I think my daughter, who's 19 months old, thinks I live in a phone.
My God, you've got a 19-month-old daughter?
Yeah, I had her when I was on my last term of city council and came back to work 10 days later.
A mother, a politician, you're active in the community. How do you do that?
Also work in nonprofit housing in my free time.
What about your hobbies? You must have two or three.
Well, definitely Vancouver Parks, being a former park board commissioner. Really enjoy the parks and community centers, especially with my little one now. Being able to sort of see that through a different scope of being a parent and being out there in the community. Other than that, I don't even have very much time for Netflix or anything else. So when people are talking to me about these new shows that are out, I'm stuck in my council binder.
Well, you've got your own show.
Exactly.
And it's full of interesting characters. Plot twists?
It's definitely a plot twist this term. It's very different than it was last term round.
We all want to know about that. So this was a vision council. Whatever happened to vision? And now you've got no working majority, or at least the mayor hasn't got a caucus of majority support. I don't think that's happened in decades.
Yeah.
And it's a very unusual mix, predominantly women. North side of the city. This is quite a different mix. So how does it work? Give us some insight.
This time round, I think that there definitely is more of a willingness for council members to work together. It's interesting sitting next to, you know, Councillor Swanson, who's overtaken the council chambers before in her own way. And sometimes I have to remind her, now you're on this side of the chambers. It's about solutions. What solutions do we have? And sometimes we can even vote together on something. So it's nice to find some common ground and come together on affordable housing.
We actually see you working out that process of trying to reach a compromise, to find a consensus on council. Lots of motions. Lots of discussion. Very often you roll things over to another day. Takes more time. Very unusual. Seems to be working.
Well, I think when we were looking at the amount of money that it's $1.5 billion, as you know, is our budget. And when we're dealing with these decisions that actually affect people's lives, and I saw that on the previous council when the promises that were made very early on weren't followed through on. And that's one of the issues that I'm having actually right now with, grappling with the climate emergency and some of the very aggressive targets that are being set. Of course, I want to be able to meet them. I want to be able to commit to them. But I also know that in Vancouver right now, we're in a time where I believe the public is looking for us to extend that trust to them and that respect that they perhaps have been missing. It was more under the vision regime, do as we say, and don't ask any questions, and if you do, you'll be punished for it. And that's what I remember. I was told if you vote on these things, we might allow you to get one or two things through.
You know, one of the criticisms of this council is that it's trying to please everybody. And I think you see that with the priorities that are being put forward, the climate crisis, climate emergency, the homelessness, the opioid crisis. These are all have been deemed priorities by the council so far. How do you see that working out when everything is a priority? How is anything a priority?
Well, it's interesting you say that because that's how we left council. We'll go back on Monday. But we left the climate emergency recommendations by staff with amendments. And the last amendment that I put forward, and I was happy that the mayor actually supported it. So it was the NPA councillors and the mayor, and that's how it passed.
Sorry, 6-5.
Yeah, so 6-5. Mm. But it said that we acknowledge that although these are targets, we may have to shift things around because we also have an overdose crisis that we have committed to and a housing and affordability crisis. And I'm not saying it has to be one or the other, but I want to be very transparent that we may not be able to do all that we want to do.
So Rob asked a good question. How do you set your MDG, your priorities, when you have to recognize you're working with others, you're looking for that sixth vote or unanimity, it's going to be very hard for people to identify what actually is your priority.
I think I've been pretty clear that my priority is about affordable housing.
And who isn't?
But I think I've been talking about affordable housing since before it was popular. In fact, when it was unpopular to talk about affordable housing, and, you know, being the first millennial on city council, I get a lot of that. I get a lot of emails, letters, questions.
You've earned your priority. Now, how to identify what makes MDG a voice? What is it that you're going to be identified with respect to housing?
Well, that's a very good question, especially coming from you and the clouds of change that sit there right in my office. And I see it every day as I pass by. And Councillor Ball actually left me her copy before she left City Hall. And that's what I ask myself, what do I want my legacy to be? And I think that really what it comes down to is making sure that I'm committed to doing work that makes people's lives better. So it's a family-friendly Vancouver for me.
Let's just stop right there. I respect that. I do think that is a genuine desire and feeling on your part. But there's nothing there that I can get my teeth into, even just having a name for something. I thank you for mentioning Clouds of Change, but you can mention Clouds of Change. There's a report and a name to it. What's yours going to be? What are you working on?
Definitely a more family-friendly Vancouver. And to dig right into that, I think it's more than just affordable housing. It's balancing the climate emergency that we're facing with affordability and making sure that we pause and we look at that. And we look at how these hashtag unintended consequences are going to affect people in Vancouver.
Yeah, but if we see one of the policies that is actually coming out of this council, it seems to be ripping up of the Rental 100 program. As much as we criticized the Rental 100 program in the past, at least it was effective at getting rental built. And now this is going to go by the wayside. There's going to be no more rental built in Vancouver, or how do you see that moving forward?
Well, I had to pull people together. That was an interesting issue, and that was just a few weeks ago. And I did say to a few councillors, so you are criticizing the fact that there's not enough subsidy, so you want to take all of the subsidy away for now? That to me doesn't make sense. So I said, what's your solution? You don't stand on the other side of the council chambers anymore. What is your solution to make housing more affordable? And until we receive that housing update that we're going to get at the end of the year, we need Rental 100 to stay. We need to continue building rental, but we also need affordable home ownership. We need to move forward. And if I have to, you know, I've said to staff, okay, I know you don't like this, but we're not just going to build one type of housing. It's like food groups. I'm going to have to tell my toddler one day, you know, too much of anything isn't good for you. So I mean, even building affordable home ownership moves people who are overhoused into a different type of housing and frees up housing across the spectrum.
I think I understand your dilemma, though. There's nothing that you can give me that I can put a name to, because you're working along with the rest of council on reports and policies and solutions that may ultimately bear fruit. But you, as MDG or as the NPA caucus, ain't got nothing for me at this point that I can say is uniquely yours.
Well, I can say that we have a 0.4% tax reduction because I fought for those amendments to the budget. You know, we can say that there's a lot we need to do in Vancouver, but we need to remember that as one of my fellow councillors says, who's not in our party, maybe a Green City councillor, it's a cup of coffee, and this is just a cup of coffee. Well, you know, by the time I'm done council, I'll have bought a whole Starbucks. So it's about affordability also. And I think, you know, that is something that I'm really proud of that we came together on and we were able to achieve. And as the chair of finance, voting for that budget meant saying, okay, Vision Vancouver left us with this. We inherited this. We did the best we could with it. Now let's move forward and let's try and be fiscally responsible and find efficiencies within our budget. I'm still looking for those efficiencies.
Well, as much as I'm pushing you on not having anything uniquely yours, or I am still impressed very much with the way that council does work towards consensus. How do you do it within the NPA?
Well, within the NPA, I think what's great about being with the NPA, and I should ask you this. I almost feel embarrassed telling you about the NPA. I feel that, you know, the NPA was definitely the party I chose to run with, and I actually had fun saying that to the Vision counselors because I was asked to run with Vision. So I've seen both sides of the what it's like on both sides of the fence. It's definitely greener on this side. I actually do believe that. I think it's not about greenwashing.
Right.
It's about what
you asked, and I will give you an answer.
Okay.
We never worked on the consensus basis. We worked on the leader basis, Gordon Campbell, Philip Owen. We would go into a caucus meeting, and what we had to do was to indicate to our other colleagues how we intended to vote so that the mayor knew whether he had the votes he needed to push forward with the policies he was identified, the ideas that he had. And that worked for us. You don't have that option. Or do you? And are you that person?
I think that it's a very different time. And I know the time that you're talking about. I worked for Sam Sullivan in 2005, during that time where there was a leader and there was a caucus. It's very different now. You have people who are brand new to the NPA, and they think that what they've brought to the table may be somewhat different than what MPA policy has been, but we can incorporate that. So I think there's more of a conversation also with 8 women on council. I think that there's a bit of a different way of doing things. So you're right, and it's not that I'm trying to avoid an answer. I really don't know. I'm still getting to know this new council. I mean, what can I say and brag about that I've hung my hat on? Affordable home ownership? I mean, I got that through Vision Vancouver, unanimously supported that. They wouldn't let it move forward, but they couldn't say no to it. And
well,
I'm
if you
very
want to run for
that.
Mayor, and I'm guessing maybe you do, we're going to need that.
Well,
Rob?
I just want to back up a bit. You talked about a different way of doing things with so many women on council, and I really would like you to expand upon that if you could. How is it different? You've been on council before. You've been on park board. How is it different dealing with 8 women on council?
Well, I think that I see that we can sit together, we can talk. Before it was very much, it was the different camps. Everybody sat in their camp. And I don't mean around the council chambers. We never had lunch together before. Now we do. And it's not just the women. I want to point out that actually, you know, the mayor and Councillor Fry and Councillor Weeb as well. There's just a different way of doing things, but we talk to each other. In fact, we're piloting a new project where you can't keep your amendments to yourself. You have to share them ahead of time, which to me, I feel a little bit exposed. If I was to do that before, they never would have passed. Maybe wouldn't have been seconded. There would have been something else that, you know, there's a lot of horse trading that's going on, and I definitely see it that way. But then again, I have people that staunchly believe in majorities or caucuses, and they say, you all have to vote the same all of the time, and you have to do it this way. And I said, well, what do you want me to get done in this next 3 years? Or, you know, as my father always taught me, I think it's about 38 visa payments. He counts things in visa payments. How many visa payments are left? And it's true when we think about people paying the bills. So what it comes down to for me is how do we achieve our goals and how does everybody feel that they've had some input on our team?
Do you do it through caucusing?
We do it through caucusing, and sometimes we agree to disagree.
The 5 NPA?
The 5 NPA.
But you meet before every council?
I'd say we actually probably meet twice. Usually, we have a check-in before council, and it's just about making sure that we kind of share that with each other. We also do talk to other caucuses too, as well, and we will share with them what we're thinking. We're not sure if we have that extra support, and we're not sure that it's always one person or another that it's coming from.
So even though you know how each of you are going to vote, You don't know what's going to happen on council because you don't or can't get that information from the other caucuses?
Some of these councillors are very new, and I know councillors who have decided not up until the second that we have a vote. I mean, there's some of these issues that we've been grappling with are very tough issues. When I look at the issues we've dealt with just in the first few months, they might be more difficult than the issues I dealt with in the past 4 years.
I think the Green candidates in particular were taking pride in not caucusing and not knowing how they're going to vote, and you can certainly see that with the three Green councillors on council. They sometimes surprise each other and themselves, right? Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say, but I think it's fair to say that we're all human beings, and sometimes a speaker will move you. And that's the reason I'm elected to be there and hear from the public. So I don't necessarily decide how I'm going to vote, and I certainly don't decide before a meeting, but I have an intention from a staff report, if we're talking about staff recommendations, or from talking to a counselor about their motion as to how I may vote, but something could change my mind in debate or discussion.
Ah, sausage making.
You know, the 11 people in the chamber now, I think you're probably the most political person there. I think politics is in your blood, and even more than Kennedy Stewart and Adrian Carr. I think you were born to politics, and you've gone through park board, you've gone to council. So how do you see this playing out for yourself? I'm interested in what you're thinking about personally. How is this, first of all, is that assumption correct? Is politics in your blood? And I'm saying that in a positive way, in a complimentary way. But where are you going with that? Where do you see your political future?
Well, I feel very honored and privileged to have been brought up and to see the impact. I don't speak much about my dad. I was always raised not to ride coattails, and that was not, you know, it was actually probably going to be harder for me, he said, if I wanted to get involved in politics. And I never thought I wanted to. Political science degree. I really liked working in the war room, and I thought that's where I was going to stay, and on the policy side. But when the opportunity came for me to run for park board, I did so. And then in working in housing, I didn't have any aspirations to run for council. And then I was asked, and I really had not thought about it. So I did so. And I ran again this time around. It wasn't easy because people thought the moment that I had a kid, I maybe the first one on council, they're not sure, to have had my baby while I was on council, people just assumed I wasn't running. So then when I had her, I realized I had to run even more so to make sure that people didn't have that assumption. What it comes down to is I'm not sure that I am the most political one. We have never had a mayor. I'd never been invited to the mayor's office before this, actually once. When Gregor complained that I'd created a salt crisis, I said, no, people were lined up at fire halls. I didn't create that. That was a salt crisis. I didn't make this up. That's the only time. Now we meet every Friday with the mayor. We talk things through. Sometimes that will change our minds. Sometimes he'll listen and say, okay, actually, I can do this if you can do that. And we can work together on policy. So we don't make decisions, but we hear from each other.
Wow.
We come to an understanding as to, I can ask him questions about why he's put forward.
This is all a council.
He meets with each caucus,
and then
we caucus with other caucuses as well.
Well, that does explain a lot.
Yeah.
Kennedy doesn't get a lot of profile on his ability to manage a complex situation, but I would say by default, he seems to be doing a pretty good job.
Well,
this explains a lot of it. He knows a lot of critical information.
He knows a lot of critical information, but I would say that it's a two-way street. We then understand a lot of critical information, and he understands that right now, I mean, definitely he is the mayor and the mayor has their own office, but I've explained to him he is one person with 7 staff and we're 5 people with half a staff member each. And I think that we may see things start to evolve and change in City Hall, but I don't think that that change can happen overnight. And I've had that conversation with several people. I didn't go in there guns a-blazing saying, this is what's going to happen. Because I think that, you know, the media asks me every day, they're calling and saying, okay, so are things still good or is the honeymoon over? And you got a little snippy last night, all of you. And I said, well, we've been there for 14 hours, you know. Put me in a room with my husband for that long and we don't have a break. And, you know, even we can get into an argument. But I think what it comes down to is I said to them, why don't you ask me in a year? Why are you setting us up for failure? Because here's the thing. I can talk about personalities, and it's no different than anyone else's work. You can have personalities in there, and not everybody needs to be friends. But at the end of the day, if I don't do the work that I'm there to do, then what is the point of me taking that time away from my daughter and from other work, as you know?
Rob, do you know of any political group, legislative body that operates like this?
That works this way? No, not that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I do think we really have to draw attention, leaving, you know, the label aside. This is quite an extraordinary moment in Vancouver's civic governance. This is just beyond politics. So, to get back to politics, how is the NPA going to really distinguish itself as we get into, say, the third year of a four-year term? And I'm thinking particularly around, the big gorilla, the city plan. Are you going to be the party that will defend individual neighborhoods? Or are you going to be a top-down party that will give direction to every neighborhood in order to achieve a city plan?
I see the city-wide plan as something that has to be it has to be built by neighborhoods. It can't be built from the top down, and I think that's what we saw with Vision.
So some neighborhoods that argue that they are really unique, and that uniqueness has to be...
I think all of them do have that
argument. I will give you that.
All of them are unique.
So
each and every one.
How do you get a city plan out of that?
Well, I think that there has to be some rules and maybe a terms of reference established. And I mean, even I don't agree 100%. Some of my colleagues on council, and I'm just speaking generally, I think they'd like to wait until the fourth year until we have a citywide plan to start implementing policy, because we have to wait for a citywide plan. I said, I'm not willing to stop affordable housing while we wait for a citywide plan. So this needs to happen in tandem. We really need to make sure that we're doing what we can, and I don't think it's one or the other, to make Vancouver affordable, to deal with, you know, the issues. And the NPA, I do want to put a plug in for the NPA, for the clouds of change, for the four pillars drug policy, which really inspired me.
Bike paths.
I was going to say the Carroll Street Greenway.
All right.
But you were part of you've been through this before, this kind of citywide thing with the Community Center Association agreement, right? That was very acrimonious and very difficult to get through. Can you tell us how that might play out with the city plan, where you have basically the same 22 neighborhoods all arguing the same way, wanting equity, wanting all these sorts of trade-offs, and you saw how it went the first time. How's it going to be
different
this time?
It is. When I think about that, that's actually what I was thinking about when I talked about this top-down policy. I really saw these groups in these neighborhoods and people who were on these community center associations who had had membership and been involved longer than I've been alive. And they had put their heart and their soul and their blood, sweat, and tears into these community center associations. And I will never forget the day that a bureaucrat came in and said to them, I don't care. These are my community centers, not yours. You will do what I say. You serve at my pleasure, not at the community's pleasure. And I'm going to find efficiencies, and I'm going to make this efficient. Well, I'm going to tell you something. There's a uniqueness there that you can't make efficiencies out of. Strathcona is going to be different than Kerrisdale. Not one's better than the other. They're just different neighborhoods. And I think that we really have to celebrate that.
Let me push you. Out of that, though, came one card. In the end, it was a term of reference that was effectively imposed. Tough decision. We can argue whether it was right or wrong. But you sound like you're trying to have it both ways. Neighborhoods, individual neighborhoods have to be respected, but there need to be terms of reference.
I think that there needs to be fairness. That doesn't mean that people can't be different. No different than we each get 5 minutes to speak in council. But we are all different. So it depends how many groups of neighborhoods come together and want certain things, and I think that will overall govern the entire plan.
But in the name of fairness, would you say each neighborhood has to take a given percent of growth, a given percent of social facilities, a given percent of
I'd say yes. I think it's going to be harder for Chinatown, especially, and seeing those businesses and the fact that hashtag unintended consequences, you downzone a neighborhood like that and the legacy businesses do hurt and they do move out and the Starbucks do come in. So I don't necessarily think that that we can look at that right now without looking at the legalities of changing some of that policy and what we're stuck with. That's above my pay grade. But again, it's listening to the neighborhood. And there's people who want UNESCO and think that it should be all about UNESCO. And there's other people that say, if we get UNESCO, that's great. But let's build the neighborhood we want, even if we don't get it.
Something that is in your pay grade. You are chair, I believe, of the Finance Committee.
Yes.
Property taxes, particularly for small businesses, particularly for small businesses in places where land values are increasing. Should there be a transfer of residential obligation to, no, taking it away from small business so they don't have to pay as much?
Well, we haven't had an opportunity to hear from the speakers.
You're not going to answer this.
No, what I will say is I do believe that businesses need to have lower taxes. I don't know that that definitely should be put on to the residential taxpayers, considering
no,
what we've heard from. But transferring is transferring. Maybe we could find another way. Maybe there's a third way. And I have some questions from staff that I'm waiting to hear back on. Maybe there's other ways. Maybe there's efficiencies in the budget that we could find, and you could have your cake and eat it too.
I'm just going to let that lie there.
A politician's
what are you having
dream.
The most fun at?
I think the most fun definitely would be the fact that we can all talk on the floor. We can. It, to me, it was very foreign. I know Councillor Carr and I had a conversation about this being so foreign that we could just be open on the floor of council and talk things through. In fact, it got to the point where we were talking things through so much, we started to implement recesses, because if not, we were going to be there endlessly with amendments to amendments to amendments to amendments. That being said, I think that there is more of a willingness for me to, when I see something, be open-minded. Like, for instance, I've said to Councillor Fry, you called notice on a motion about Hastings Racecourse. Did you know that they have a childcare facility there and how many jobs? It's the only childcare facility in all of Vancouver that opens at like 4 a.m. My kid doesn't go there, but it's in my neighborhood, so I know that. And he said, no, I didn't know that. So, I mean, these are the conversations we can have instead of me sitting in my office and stewing over what he's doing.
Well, that settles it. Politics is in your blood if you think that that's the definition of fun times. And for you, it is.
Certainly is.
We did talk about this governance by exhaustion, the end of 14-hour days, trying to make decisions after two consecutive days. But you, when you're watching, I have to say that you are the one that's still going strong, and there, you know, the camera goes around the council table, and a lot of people can look very tired. How do you find? Are you that combative kind of personality? I know George Affleck he relishes that. Do you find that too, or how do you function in that type of environment?
I think it depends on how protective of an issue it is, and how. For instance, housing is something that is very, very personal to me. It's something that this is the reason that I ran for council, to bring my experience to the table. When it comes down to it, though, I think that everybody has something to offer. I also think, though, that I bring a bit of a unique perspective from last term, where I would push a ball uphill for 14 hours just to have it fall back down on me. So at the end of 14 hours, if I've achieved the first motion I passed or I brought forward on this council passed unanimously. I was in shock. Right. I mean, that doesn't usually happen, and not from other parties. And usually there's a lot. I mean, last term I was called a murderer. Last term, a lot of the NPA were, because we didn't want a 0.5% tax increase overnight. I didn't say that it was wrong to increase the tax eventually. I just said, let's have a conversation about this. We're hearing from people. And Vision said, well, then you're responsible for the, you know, a Vision counselor, I should say, actually said, you're culpable for the deaths of these people. And I said, that is not fair. And it got very divisive. It would digress. There were some formal complaints made on the previous council, and I don't see that with this council. We're all kind of, even when things get tough, at the end of the day, we can all sit down and have a meal together, and that brings me back to kind of my Italian heritage. And one of the things that I am very proud of, which is, and I will answer your question, one of the things that I've already done that I'm quite proud of is Little Italy, and making sure that there was a place on Commercial Drive where it was actually recognized, where 8 blocks of Commercial Drive, and that was last term. And I think I had to put that forward 3 times before it actually passed.
Well, that's a great segue into who Vancouver is. Because Commercial Drive isn't Italian in the way that Broadway isn't really Greek. Those were the reflections of the immigration patterns just after the war. Now, just simply look around the building that we're in, the library, walk on the streets. You can see this dramatic shift that has occurred because of immigration patterns. And because now we're a different city, we're certainly more Asian, we're becoming more Middle Eastern, we're becoming younger. I find it fascinating. What do you see? Who are we now?
Who aren't we? And I think that that's one of the really great and unique things about Vancouver. And although, as you said, you know, there was this wave of immigration during the Second World War, and that's when the Italians came here. It was summed up really well in a Georgia Strait article by Charlie Smith. And I've always really admired Charlie Smith and gotten along quite well with him, which people are shocked because I'm NPA and he's Charlie Smith and we shouldn't be getting along. And I'm not saying that we always agree. But he wrote a very moving piece, actually, it brought me to tears. And it was talking about the contributions and how if the immigrants, and especially from the Italian community, didn't move here, how we might not have the development companies that have that Italian influence. And I'm just using this example. I'm not saying the whole city is Italian. But I think that, you know, the fact that we are here today is because of those waves of immigration. And I remember my father, I mean, he is of Italian-Swiss heritage, but he actually speaks a little bit of Cantonese because I grew up with him working in paper products before he went into real estate in Chinatown. So he would take us around Chinatown with him. I'd have a stick of dollar meat. I'd be the kid with a coconut bun at Kiefer Bakery. And it was really, it truly was more than just saying multicultural. It was... We embrace that. But I also think that what came with that was an understanding that the economy in Vancouver is so important. And it was important to our family, and I wouldn't still be living here if that wasn't something that I had the opportunity to experience. And if Vancouver wasn't such a port city that was open and welcoming to so many.
When I read the politically aware social media, the other blogs, they all kind of observed that MDG went through what seemed to be a sort of personality change from the previous council to this one, that the role she was playing was different, that the way she treated the other councillors and responded was different. And now I think I understand. It wasn't a lot of fun before. You're a mother, and you're a much more sophisticated politician. Really appreciate you sharing some of that in this half hour.
Indeed.
Thank you.